This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
I've not looked at the table and I won't do. I'll only assess at the death. Those are the words of Chris Wilder after the 3-0 triumph against Burnley this week. Well, I tell you what, Chris, I will look at the table. I'm telling you now, I will look at that Premier League table because as things stand, Sheffield United stand sixth in the Premier League, 16 points from 11 games, unbeaten in four, the joint best defensive record in the Premier League with Leicester, 8 goals. They've even got Sean Dyche congratulating the team, saying the better team beat his team and not focusing on the referee. It is quite remarkable what is happening at Bramall Lane this season. This is the Sheffield United fan show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, standing in for the great Charlie Hawkins for 1 week only and joined, as ever, by Mr. James Shield. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Hello there. I'm good. And you?
Yes, very good, thank you. I'm pumped. I've got energy because I tell you what, the Blades be a-buzzing.
They've got an awful lot of energy themselves at the moment as well, and I think they'll be absolutely looking forward to the game against Tottenham this weekend after the result that they had against Burnley. I must admit, I just heard you say there and sort of review about how Chris Wilder said that he didn't look at the table after that result against Sean Dyche's side. I've got to admit, I don't believe him for a minute, actually.
Yeah, nonsense.
I know. I understand the point he's trying to make, you know, that it's all about an accumulation of points. That's become one of his favourite mantras. And I think, you know, they've got good reason to be cautious, even despite the fact they've had a great start. I think Hull City a few years ago were in a very similar position and ended up just staying up by the skin of their teeth. So, you know, there's an awful lot of football to be played and an awful lot can go wrong. But I think with the way, if you look at the way they're, not only the results they're getting, but the performances they're putting in, I think they've got every reason to be pretty confident going forward.
It was quite the afternoon at Bramall Lane, wasn't it, James? I mean, first and foremost, I've got to touch on, we're going to come to John Lundstrom in a moment, but I've got to touch on Lys Mousset, because this is a gent who, I won't lie, in my group of friends, in various journalist circles as well, has been, and mocked is a bit of a harsh word, but this is a guy who joined Bournemouth in the 2016-17 season, scored 3 goals in the space of near on 3 seasons. Last season, he earned the tag, of course, for being the player substituted more than anyone else in the Premier League. In just 2 starts, and we can call it 8 appearances in total, I suppose, with his substitute appearances, 3 goals, 3 assists. He assisted all 3 goals in that game on Saturday.
Yeah, he did. And he's made a remarkable impact, to be fair. And I think what you're seeing, certainly what I'm sort of witnessing at Bramall Lane at the moment, but also on the road as well, is a little bit of a cult hero in the making. I think, obviously, I think the big factor behind the impact that Lys has made is just opportunity. And it's been spoken about before, you know, at Bournemouth, I think he was behind Josh King and Callum Wilson. And, you know, there probably aren't too many better double acts in the Premier League at the moment. So I think he was always going to be restricted a little bit, but it was quite interesting for me. I just had a little bit of a look back through his career again and just reviewed some of the things that I looked at when Lys first arrived at Bramall Lane. And it was just interesting sort of seeing how he performed at Le Havre, his club, before he came to England. And he worked under Bob Bradley there, who was the manager responsible for turning him from a winger into a centre-forward. And it's just interesting. I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that Eddie Howe didn't have sort of belief and faith in Lys. I think, you know, if that was the case, he wouldn't have signed him in the first place. But I just think it's interesting how this is a player who he excelled under Bob Bradley in France, who was clearly a coach, sort of having spoken to myself actually over the past couple of days for a little piece I'm putting together, had an awful lot of belief in Lys. And Chris is the same as well. And I just wonder if this is a player whose sort of personality really needs a manager to show that faith in him. But he's certainly finding a home at Bramall Lane. And the great thing about those assists, as you said, was, you know, all of them, especially the first one for John Lundstrom, they were really clever assists as well. He's a player who's got an awful lot of pace, he's got an awful lot of power, but those little touches he made for the three goals, I think they showed he's got an awful lot of technique as well.
100%. And actually, I think some people questioned or suggested, quite cynically so, I should say, that maybe he didn't even mean it. But it was quite clear. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would have been the luckiest pass in the history of football, wouldn't it? If he, you know, and certainly if he'd have made that without meaning it, the first one, you can actually see on the television replays as well, that he knew exactly where John Lundstrom was going to be. And it was a delightful touch. I just think it's great to see a player. It's one of the good things that Sheffield United have got up top at the moment is that every single one of the strikers they've got brings something just a little bit different to the table. And some, quite clearly, are taking more time to adjust than others. And I don't think that's a surprise because of the system that Sheffield United play. And, you know, it's very unusual. And dare I say it, you know, you've got the likes of Ollie McBurney and Callum Robinson, who have all done well, but they're making a step up in class. They were obviously Championship players last year, so they're coming to terms with the demands of Premier League football. They're also having to come to terms with the demands of a new and very, very different system as well. Lees has obviously got to come to terms with that system, but I think he's a little bit more of an off-the-cuff player at times when he's got the ball at his feet, so I think that helps. And, of course, despite the fact that he was substituted and really struggled for starts at Bournemouth, I don't think it's any surprise that he's the player who's adapted quickest because, of course, he has got that Premier League experience.
Yeah, indeed he has. And there was also the comparison to David Brooks in the summer as well, in that you signed Lees from Bournemouth for around about the same amount that Bournemouth signed David Brooks for. And there was a suggestion that maybe, crikey, that's not the best swap deal. But if you look at this season, it's not really been the worst. And another player I want to discuss is John Lundstrom, because I tell you what, he hadn't scored, as you know, I would imagine, since February 2018. That was against QPR. Quite some time later, he has got three goals this season, very nearly got his hat trick. And when you look at Lundstrom's career, it's a great tale, because he's one of these players who obviously started at Everton. He was released as a youngster. So many spells on loan, of course, before being released. He then joined Oxford, so he went down the tiers and has made his way back up to the top and at the moment looks at home in the Premier League.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know this sounds daft, but I do think there's some sort of merit in this. I just think that Premier League football, with sort of the athleticism that it requires and, you know, with the demands and sort of the tactical sort of nous that's required, I just wonder if it suits John Lundstrom a little bit better than possibly Championship football does. And you look at that story as well, that you mentioned there, sort of the backstory to John. He's almost a poster boy in a daft sort of way for the way that an awful lot of Sheffield United players have come through their careers and risen through the ranks. There's an awful lot of them that have had sort of setbacks. Ender Stevens, another player who's doing very well, came over from Ireland, didn't really make the grade at Aston Villa, and then sort of ended up, you know, obviously having to claw his way back with Portsmouth helping to take them out of League Two, I should say. John Fleck, another one, started at Rangers, you know, was touted as the next Wayne Rooney, wasn't he, at the start of his career. Mm-hmm. He had to go to sort of Blackpool and Coventry City. And I think the fact that John took that step down as well, I just think that says something about his personality. He's clearly a player who, A, believes in himself, and I think he certainly needed that at times last season, because his Sheffield United career, let's not try and dress it up, it stalled at best. You know, you could even say it was absolutely going nowhere, and I think an awful lot of people were expecting him to be moved on during the summer, but There's a number of things, and I think that self-belief is one of them, but there's another few things that we'll probably get onto in a moment that I think have sort of really helped him flourish and blossom this season.
So when you say those things, well, the things that you're referring to, James, I mean, are you talking about the personnel within the club? Are you talking about the fact that Chris Wilder has maybe appealed to him? What is it that's made him or moulded him into the player that he's become?
Well, I think the most important thing is Sheffield United, they've got this system that we've talked about, you know, in the past, and it's received an awful lot of coverage about the, you know, the three at the back, the overlapping centre-halves, that, you know, that get beyond the wing-backs. They've kept the framework of that since they've been promoted, but there's been a very, very subtle tweak to it, and I think this is one of the things that's really given John the opportunity that he's grasped with both hands. And if you looked at the way they played in the Championship last season, where I think they knew they could dominate possession, the way that they set up, the approach was all about sort of overwhelming teams and sort of, you know, just suffocating them with sheer weight of pressure and the sheer volume of attacks that they would make. And they played with an out-and-out number 10, if you like, Mark Duffy in that role, who was very, very much a... John Lundstrom's a creative player, but Mark Duffy was a creative player more sort of in the sense that you would first think about it. You know, he would beat a man with a sort of a drop of the shoulder. He could carry the ball. He'd play a nice little through pass and things like that. But I think they've obviously realised that as they've moved up through the levels, they're not going to enjoy as much possession as they did. In fact, I think there's only one or two games where this season they've actually enjoyed more possession than the opposition in a game. So they clearly took a look at that over the summer, thought, you know what, we need a little bit more of a physical presence in there. I know that they looked at trying to bring in a box-to-box midfielder, and that didn't quite work out, but John Lundstrom had performed that role very well all the way through pre-season. So he was given the chance. He's certainly taken it. And I do just think it's that very, very subtle change in emphasis that's given him the ability and the opportunity to shine in this team. I think the other thing as well is you've got a manager who really does sort of demand that the players sort of drive themselves forward and keep improving. And clearly, I think all credit to John, that's something that he's done because, like I say, last season, 10 appearances all year. The vast majority of those being sort of appearances that came off the bench. I think he had to show an awful lot of self-belief as well.
I tell you what, in terms of stats as well, there's an incredible one from this game, and we do love a stat on this show. It's just the 9th occasion, apparently. I haven't actually looked this up myself. I've seen this, and I'm not 100% sure it's completely accurate, but apparently the 9th occasion a Blades player has scored 2 or more goals in a Premier League game. I mean, that's incredible. The last time it was done was Nathan Blake against Newcastle in April 1994. I've done a little bit of research, as you might imagine, James. And do you know what? It might be accurate because have you got any idea who the others might be?
Oh, dear me now. Do you know what? You've absolutely got me there. I'm a terrible one for stats. I do know the Nathan Blake one is correct, by the way. And I'm just going to gloss over my lack of lack of knowledge about Sheffield United players who have scored 2 goals in Premier League games. But I'll tell you what, that should have been a hat trick from John at the weekend as well. And if you could criticise the performance that he put in any way, shape or form, I think that would just be being a little bit too picky. You've got to say that he should have really taken one of the 2 chances that he enjoyed at the end of the game.
Yeah, he definitely should have had the 3, shouldn't he? I think the only player that has scored a hat-trick for Sheffield United in the Premier League is, of course, Brian Dean. And I've done that stat a disservice. It is correct. I'd slightly miscounted. It is the 9th time. Nathan Blake, as you said, is the most recent one. Before that, Brian Dean got a brace, of course, on the opening day of the season, opening the inaugural Premier League season in 92-93. Of course, scored the first ever Premier League goal, as we know. He scored twice. He also scored the hat-trick, as I mentioned. The others, James, get this. Jostein Flo got 2 twice. So he bagged the brace twice. Of course, the brother of Tor André, I believe. Adrian Littlejohn, Dane Whitehouse, and Ian Bryson. Now, there's a name from the past.
There certainly is. I spoke to Ian a couple of years ago, actually, just before Sheffield United. Well, in fact, it was last season, just before Sheffield United played Preston, one of his old clubs. And he's a great supporter of both teams. But another, like you say, probably another unlikely scorer of a Premier League Blake brace. It's probably not one of the names that would have immediately sprung to mind, is it? But do you know what? I think that's one of the great things about sort of Sheffield United, not only back in the Premier League this season, but in the past as well. And I think, you know, it's a club that really sort of can almost... Hero sometimes is sort of too strong a word, but I think it's a club where just players with real attitude and sort of real commitment and character sort of find a home and flourish a little bit as well. So it doesn't surprise me to hear you say that, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it is Tottenham up's next. Premier League minnows, Tottenham up next, facing the high-flying Blades, of course, in the Premier League. James, we're going to speak to you about that after this.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
You are listening to Love Sport. It's the Sheffield United fan show and I am Matt Beadle. We've got about 10 minutes of the show left. As ever, I'm joined by James Shield of the Sheffield Star. James, it is great to have you on. And I just want to talk about a certain someone that we've spoken many times about before, but top of the pile for clean sheets this season so far alongside Ederson, Manchester City's Ederson, of course. Do you know Dino Henderson? Soon on top. He is just performing week after week after week. And I know that it owes a lot to the team as well. But five clean sheets, that is impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And he had very little to do against Burnley at the weekend. I suspect he might have a little bit more to do this weekend at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But there was just a couple of instances where he had to sort of clean up a few loose balls. And I think by doing that so effectively, he showed his concentration levels there and the focus that he brings. And I think it's also worth mentioning that you've seen a player here who, obviously, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking long before Dean was sort of drafted into the England squad. It was a well-deserved call-up. I think most people can agree on that. But, you know, we were talking about a player who had committed a really costly error against Liverpool. It was, you know, it was a real gift for the goal that Liverpool scored to win that game and deny Sheffield United what, in fairness, even Jurgen Klopp admitted afterwards would have been a deserved point. And I think what you've seen is that there's a player here who, listen, every goalkeeper is always going to make a mistake. They're always going to drop a wicket at some point and it's going to be highlighted. Chris Wilder at the time spoke about the importance of Dean being able to just bounce back from a mistake like that and to dust himself down and show what he's all about. He's done it in the past. And I think, you know, very often you'll see a keeper respond the next game and then maybe revert to type. But what you've seen, and it's been a real common theme all the way through Dean's sort of season and a little bit at Bramall Lane now, because, of course, he was on loan there last year as well, is that when he does make a mistake, and as I say, I don't think there's any shame in that, it's not just one or two games that he comes back with and really responds in style. He goes on a really long run of really, really good form after that. When it keeps on happening, because he made mistakes against Aston Villa last season, went on a long run of clean sheets. He made a mistake against Leeds last season, went on a long run of clean sheets. When it keeps on happening, I think this just gives you a little insight into what's going on between the ears of that player. And I think it shows as well that he's got that ability that every top goalkeeper who reaches the highest level of the game, and when I say that, I mean international football, I think he's got that quality that every one of those players needs, and that's the ability just to be able to park an error and then just to go back and show, you know, what qualities and what skill sets they've got. And I've got absolutely no doubt. I think Dean's certainly got the technical tools to become England's number one goalkeeper. He's certainly got time on his hands. He's only 22, but I think the most important thing for that position is that he's clearly got the mentality as well. And I think over the next couple of years, I think you're probably looking at England's next first choice goalkeeper.
I couldn't agree more with you, James. I think as well, in terms of stature, he sets up a lot like Jordan Pickford in a way. And I think Pickford also has the mentality that you're talking about with regards to Dean Henderson. And you're right, it's that mental toughness. And that's what happened. That is what's happening now with a lot of these younger goalkeepers, is that the psychological aspects of the game are really, really ingrained within them. And like you said, the mistakes that he's made, the mistake he made in the under-21 tournaments in the summer, I mean, he bounced back from that and he shows, and you see him walking around the stadium and, you know, pushing his fingers up, saying, yeah, you know, we're moving up, and his brand, his soon on top brand. I love the fact that he pretty much finishes every tweet with that as well. That mental resilience, that visualization, those affirmations that I imagine he's constantly preaching to himself are just bearing fruit. And I agree with you 100%. I think he's definitely an England goalkeeper of the future.
Yeah, I agree with it. I think if you look at the the common thread that both, and there's probably a lesson here as well for a lot of young players, but the common thread that binds sort of Dean Henderson and Jordan Pickford together is that they were both getting and are getting games under their belt at a very young age. And they're getting experience that possibly other young goalkeepers that aren't playing regular first-team football, that aren't, you know, they're gaining experiences, they're gaining sort of, you know, that mental toughness. They've been able to develop that on the job, and they're really building up vast reserves of experience and knowledge. And I don't think you can beat that. I think the one interesting thing that's going to come up, though, in Dean's career, and in order to become England's number one, he's clearly going to have to be playing regular first-team football at Premier League level. And I'm just going to be interested, and this is by no means a black mark. I don't think it's in any way, shape or form it casts any doubt over what you and I feel that he'll do in the future. But he may well have a decision soon to make about where he's playing his club football, because he clearly feels that he's good enough to play in the Premier League. He clearly is good enough to play in the Premier League. I think if you ask him, and he means this with no disrespect towards Sheffield United whatsoever, because it's a club that he's clearly sort of really taken to heart, I think he clearly feels he could be Manchester United's number one at the moment. Now, as long as David De Gea's there, he might have to sort of park those ambitions. So I just wonder if, you know, together with his sort of, with his family and his representatives, he might just have to, towards the end of the season or at the end of the season, just have a little sit down and survey the landscape at Old Trafford. And, you know, possibly if they can preserve their Premier League status, I think it would cost an awful lot of money for a young goalkeeper, but there's possibly an opportunity opening up there for Sheffield United. I certainly don't think if Dean Henderson came on the open market, there would be any shortage of takers for him.
I thought when you said preserving Premier League status, you were referring to Man United for a second there, James. But yeah, I agree. And it was quite interesting, actually, to listen to Chris Wilder after that game against Liverpool, where he did make that error and let that Gini Wijnaldum shot slip through his fingers, that Chris Wilder was quite blunt, as he always is in his post-match interviews. And he said, you know, if he wants to play for the top clubs, if he wants to play for Man United, because he thinks he can play for Man United. So they've clearly had that conversation whereby, you know, Dean Henderson has these grand designs of being Manchester United's number one. It's not going to help that David De Gea has signed this bumper new deal. And part of me thinks, do you know what? I think a lot of United fans now would probably not be happy to see De Gea go, but to maybe go, do you know what, you've given us a lot of service. And sometimes I think for a player, when you spend that much time at a club, it's almost too much of a good thing, in a sense that maybe you just need to change things for yourself to have a bit of a freshness, a bit of a new challenge. That doesn't look like it's going to happen. So I think you're right with Dean Henderson. Yep, I think he has got a massive decision to make. And speaking of Liverpool and that era, they haven't lost a game on the road this season. There's one other team who haven't lost a game on the road this season, and that, of course, is Sheffield United, off to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium this season. Tottenham currently languishing in 11th in the Premier League. Quite a bizarre campaign, though, this season, as we know. There's 13 teams separated by 6 points. Of course, Sheffield United are one of those. How do you see this one going, James?
I think this is going to be a really fascinating game because, you know, Sheffield United are clearly going to go there in good form. They're clearly going to enter that game with an awful lot of confidence. And, you know, there's a team there that really does take responsibility for its own sort of actions and its results. And I think that stems from comments like Chris Wilder's towards Dean Henderson after that mistake against Liverpool, that, you know, he's a manager who wants players to take responsibility for what they do. Having said all of that, for all the indifferent results that they've had, Tottenham have clearly got an awful lot of ability at their disposal and some real top-class talent. So they're, you know, quite capable of turning it on their day. I wouldn't be at all surprised, though. I think, you know, it's actually January when Sheffield United last lost away from home. It was Swansea City were the team who sort of hold the title of being the last team to beat Sheffield United on the road. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we saw a similar type game as the one Sheffield United were involved in down at West Ham, where, you know, they have to withstand periods of pressure. But I think they've got not only the belief, but I think they've got the system really nailed down now. I think they've got it really well choreographed that they can withstand that. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if there was, you know, possibly a goal each shared in this game and it finished something like 1-1. And if it did, I think it would be another great result for Sheffield United.
Yeah, it is fascinating to see what happens. I think it's more than 80 games now that Spurs haven't been involved in a goalless draw. So there's definitely going to be goals, I would have thought, especially with the goals that Sheffield United are scoring at the moment. James, it has been wonderful having you on. I would imagine that we will be speaking to you after that game and next week, and hopefully applauding another Sheffield United victory, which may well put them into fifth in the Premier League. The lofty heights of fifth. Quite unbelievable. And that is that for the Sheffield United fan show. I believe that James Shield of the Sheffield... Are you still there, James?
Sorry, I just lost you there, Matt. I do apologise.
No worries. I just did my end to the show and you gave me nothing. James, it's been great. We're going to have to move on, I'm afraid. Great having you on.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Cheers, buddy. That was James Shield of the Sheffield Star. We'll see you next week on the Sheffield United fan show on Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.